You are listening to selfdiscoveryradio.com with an orchard of wisdom just ready for your picking, filled with illuminating, inspiring stories. Do check out the community and the discovery stores. We are here for you. Our next show is...
Hello everyone and welcome to Self Discovery Radio. This is Thoughts Become Things International, retraining your thought process. And I am your host, Nehemiah Davila, aka Neo Positivity. And today we are going to be talking about addiction. We're going to be talking about a lot more than that. I know that's kind of sounded depressing when I first said it. We're going to be talking about a lot more than that, mainly Thoughts Become Things, like the title of the show. And we're going to get into all kind of things. Addiction has hit me, especially in my gut. There's a couple people that are in my life that are addicted to some things, and you know, being a life coach, I'm not able to coach them out of it as far as telling them to just picture it, see yourself not an addict anymore. I don't have all the tools in my toolbox necessary to be able to help someone to my fullest potential. So I had come up with the Neo Positivity group. You guys know, group life coaches, everybody, you know, different niches, ADHD, and Jim Pekonen is who I'm having on my show today. He is a life architect at Recovery Elevated, an amazing life design. He's a great guy. I had him on Off the Bench recently, and he absolutely lit the studio on fire. The owner came out and said that he was the best guest that I've had on the show. He's just an all-around great person. Right before we started the show, I said, "You ready to go?" And he said, "Let's have fun," you know? So, everyone, yeah. welcome, please. Jim Pekonen, how you doing today?
I am doing phenomenal. Thank you, Neo. It is such, that show is amazing. Man.
Yeah. Boom. It's a great outlet, man. It's good for me to be able to get up there and, just share some of the secrets. But it's only a half an hour. This one's an hour. And we rocking and rolling. So tell us a little bit about yourself. It's like deja vu a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit of your background, kind of childhood you were raised in. You know, just give people a feel for who you are.
Perfect. Okay. Well, first off, my name is Jim. I was born in Santa Cruz, California, raised in Iowa. I stayed there through college after college. And since college, I have lived in Iowa, Illinois, Idaho, and Utah for the last 20 years.
Okay.
About in 2005, I became a coach because prior to that, I made my way up the traditional ladder. I ended up as a general manager of a temperature controls company here in Utah, where we quite literally turned the revenue from about $1.8 million a year to $5.1 million for 5 years straight. To me, that's easy. I love dealing with people, but it was such a heartless thing.
Yeah, money.
So I left it and I got into coaching, and now I primarily two companies. Right, I got Recovery Elevated. Recovery Elevated, I work with those that are in addiction recovery. I assist them to literally, my work is spiritual work. So I assist them to get back to an honored and sacred love for self. Because when you have a deep honored and sacred love for yourself, you don't need to use. And then I also have Amazing Life Design. And for those who may not be in addiction per se, but yet they still struggle in the world today, let's take a look at what we can do to not only get your life back on track, but quite literally get you in the driver's seat and really enjoying this amazing thing that we call life.
And that's the life architect part about it. I mean, being a life coach is great, but the word architect automatically makes you think of the intricate details that go into a structure. And that's what I like to do. I like to break things down and get down to the foundation. Because you could paint a house or a thought with as many beautiful pictures as you want, but if it's built on a crappy foundation, it's built on a crappy foundation. So life architect, I want you to give me what your definition of that is.
So my definition of life architect is someone who actually guides you, and not only from the foundation, because I love that you brought up the foundation, right? Not only from the foundation, but how do we build those support walls? Quite literally, how do you design the different rooms inside of your own being that you go into, and then some of them that you don't?
So, you know, so what? While I got you right there, tell us how.
Well, what I do is I work with people and I have you understand how you create the story that you call life. Because one of the things that I know is that life is created inside of us. There is no out there. There is only the inside that CPU called the brain processes based upon all of your previous traumas, dramas, and life experiences. And when you, and it's in my work, right, we talk about awareness and understanding. And when I work with addicts, it's the easiest to describe is like awareness, right? Drugs are bad. You can tell somebody that's addicted to drugs that drugs are bad. But until you understand the roots of your pain and the roots of your misery, and in the understanding of the roots of your misery, quite literally, you begin to transcend all of that pain and you really find and create an amazing life. So the work I do is literally in the conversation. I tell people that work with me that they get about 5 to 10% of their transformation will occur as we interact. When they go out into the world and they apply what we talk about in our sessions, their minds are blown because their experience of life shifts. And when your experience of life shifts, and when you understand how you create this thing called experience, you cannot ever go back to what you were before.
You will not ever, cannot ever. You know how many times I said that to people? I'm never going back. And you know what's crazy? I never had to say I'm never going back to myself, because it was just, I don't have to say that. It goes without saying, but I've said it to so, and I just realized that when I said it, I've said that to so many people, I'm never going back to the way I used to think. My old thought process, first of all, thinking that things are random, that happen, you could have a good day, you could have a bad, never going back to that. And watering the wrong seeds, and I say that, vibrating at the wrong frequency. In other words, spending time thinking about something I don't want to happen in my future. I'm never going back to those thought processes, and I don't have to. And once you realize you don't have to, you're going to say the same thing. Trust me.
Yeah. And with me, like I work from the psychology of mind. Because when you begin to understand the mind, you cannot get, I mean, it's funny, right? Because one of the things, and one of the things I teach, we all go from a space of love, right? And it, you ever notice that when you're in the space of love and full self-acceptance, there is so much clarity. Literally, the wisdom of the ages arises through you and with you. And then at other times, right, and this is the cycle that we go through as spiritual beings in a human experience. At other times, you're in the space of non-love, which I say is cloudy. And I say non-love because non-love is that space that is not love. And in that space, everything is cloudy, everything is tough, life is tough, and we all go through, we literally, like a sine wave, we go through love, we go through non-love, and the non-love is different for different people. So when I work with people, I get them to understand their specific non-love as it relates to them, and when you understand it, you can transcend it.
Can you give me an example of that? I would love to have if you could pull up your best, I would love to have a great example of that.
Are you willing to work with me for a minute?
Me personally, I was going to use somebody else.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Let's go. I love it. Let's go.
So I want you, I want the amazing and incredible Neo to think back to the first time that you were upset in life. That youngest, I want you to tell me what happened.
It was probably had something to do with dropping the football.
So let's say, so there you were, you dropped the football, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, what did Neo say about Neo?
Wait till next time. I'm gonna get it next time.
No. That's probably a fifth or sixth generation.
Oh.
What do you think the young, what did you say when you dropped it?
Damn.
Right? I got it. And then there was an I am or an I am not statement. What is it?
I didn't catch that.
I got it. But what would you have said about yourself? I am or I am not what?
I don't know. I am not. I don't know. I didn't catch it.
I know you didn't catch it, but not catching it, it left you with a feeling. What was that feeling about you that you could put into the simplest?
Oh, I'm angry.
Right? I am angry. And that's the emotion that went with it. But we're going to go under the emotion. Why were you angry? How did it feel to be Neo in that moment? You were not what?
It hurt.
I got it hurt. You were not what? I just wanted to keep throwing things out.
As good as I could be.
Now you're close. You're second generation, right? I am not as good as I can be.
I'm not
so
perfect?
If you go under that, what would you say? I am not what?
I'm not perfect. I'm not.
I'm not perfect is a third generation. We got to go under two. I am not what? I am not.
A good catcher?
No. I am not good enough, right?
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, because that can apply to anything.
I am not good in that moment. You saw yourself as not good enough. And here's a quick question. What is the opposite for you of not good enough?
Good enough.
Right. Okay. So, but sometimes it's obvious. Sometimes it's not. So can you see that from early on, you had a filter that you literally looked at life through the filter that I am not good enough. And you've always, your work with people is so that they think you are good enough.
Okay.
That, my friend, is the work. And from here, we build upon that. Because the first thing I do is I would ask you to tell me where is all the places that you are not good enough.
I don't know.
And you would literally list them out, right? You may tell me about failed relationships. You may tell me about a dream that you had that you don't have. You may say these things. And all those things point back to that first break from love, which is I'm not good enough.
Okay.
And yet, in our work together, you will transcend that and you will see how amazing and incredible. Because at a spiritual level, that was your break from love. And in our work, we will transcend that. Now, the funny thing is that story will always be there. But when you understand it, you have choice to be good enough or not good enough.
Let me ask you, you made me think of something real quick. When, in those times that you are good enough, in your mind, for lack of a better term, are good enough, why does it not last as long as the I'm not good enough? It's crazy how that is. The over-under on that is crazy.
But here's the thing. The more you understand how you created the story, it actually reverses to where the not good enough for you, right? Because there are actually 8 core stories. That's one of them. You actually get that is the smallest amount of time. It is a larger amount of time now because you have been living as if that was the filter by which you saw life. So when we live as if that's the filter by which we see life, quite simply, that is how life comes back at you. You're going to find all the evidence in the world.
You know what? Being able to see what Jim is talking about, involves something that I have stolen the phrase from Jim called NOMAC. Tell us about NOMAC, because without NOMAC, you will not be able to reach any of this. You're going to harbor all these feelings about your past. You're going to let them dictate you and your thoughts, which is dictating your future. Tell us about NOMAC.
So NOMAC, right? No mistake. And I got to give my friend Jeff credit to this.
Okay.
Because Jeff is one of my spiritual teachers who works for a company that makes the airbags here in Utah. I probably can't say the company, but if you do. And they literally call him a machine whisperer. Because they send him anywhere around the world, and he can get the process going. And nobody knows how or why he's so successful, and he chuckles. But he taught me. He says, NOMAC. He says, no mistakes, no accidents, no coincidences. Everything occurs for the perfect reason that it needs to occur, as long as you lose the excuses and begin to see the growth.
Now, I love that phrase because that's a big thing for me. No mistakes, no accidents, no coincidence. I don't believe in coincidence. If I did something right or something good, I'm not going to blame it on luck, coincidence. I'm not giving anybody credit for that. I stay disciplined enough to keep my thoughts right long enough to manifest that experience into my life. I'm taking credit for it. You know, there's no coincidence. Yep. But with owning the good, you got to own your bad. There's no mistakes. I was meant to do that so I can learn from it and do bigger the next time. And that's why I love that whole NOMAC.
So may I give you an example that it's worthy of a discussion?
Yes, of course.
So 2.5 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer.
Wow, I did not know
that. NOMAC.
I did not know that.
No mistakes, no accidents, no coincidences.
So how do you take that? Because now you're entering a new territory right here. Now you're entering a new zone right here.
So may I tell you a little story?
Yes.
About a little over 3 years ago, I got rear-ended by a semi. Semi was doing more than 65 miles an hour. We were doing about 30, 35. That thing slammed into us, and it was carrying a NASCAR.
Wow.
That thing slammed into us hard.
So you own that NASCAR, is that what you're saying?
No, I
don't
own that NASCAR.
Sorry.
But I herniated two of my discs. And it was causing a lot of pain, so I was literally going through physical therapy. Nothing was working. And after 5 months, they actually said, maybe we should do an MRI. Guess what the MRI found?
What, the herniations?
A big old tumor.
Wow.
Now, here's why I think it's NOMAC that a tumor was found in me. I believe that we create our reality, correct?
Yes.
Neil, what can you tell me about the tumor? Be really. I'm just looking for a simple answer here. Was the tumor real?
I'm going to say no.
Hell yes, that tumor was real. It's huge.
No, I mean, I don't consider anything real. I consider everything just vibrating energy, you, me, life, air. That's why I said that. But you know what? As soon as I hear anything cancerous, I think handed down from generation to generation. They say right. That it's genetics.
So was this massive energy that was vibrating at a frequency inside my kidney, was that real or created?
Created. Everything real is created.
Well, but it was real, right? It was like physically real. It was there.
Yeah, physically, yeah.
And here's my point, right? The tumor was real, but I got to create everything beyond that. I got to create how I dealt with it. I got to create how I viewed it. That was my creation.
Okay.
And I literally think, right? I believe in a higher power. And whether you call your higher power God or Yahweh or Great Spirit or hey you, right? Whatever you call your higher power, I believe higher power was saying, okay, Jim, you think you got this thing down about no Mac and about like creating your reality? Let's see how you create your reality. And it's interesting because it was the tumor was discovered on a Monday morning. It was diagnosed on a Tuesday, and because my amazing lady works at the cancer hospital here, they were able to get me in to get a CAT scan first thing the next morning.
Wow.
And at noon, it was diagnosed, yes, you have renal cell carcinoma. And I'm like, what stage? And they said, renal, chances are, they said, we cannot biopsy because renal cell carcinoma is one of the most nasty ones out there. Long story short is we need to get it out of there. So we set up on Thursday morning. I got in first to the best surgeon in the West. And the guy looked at that and basically all it looked like it was okay except for just one they call them margins, one area where it may have actually metastasized. And the doc looks at me and is like, we gotta get this baby out of here. And I looked at him and I'm like, okay. And he says, we're ready to open up a space. We can get you in tomorrow, Friday or Monday. I said, that doesn't work. I said, we have a family vacation plan. And there was also, they talked about there is a risk of death. Wow. So I said, if I'm going to die, I'd rather die after my family vacation. My girls have a regional skating competition and I prefer to die after. So we set it up. 25 days later was St. Patty's Day.
Okay.
You know what I did for 25 days?
Drank.
No, I didn't.
Positive affirmations, I would say.
I worked out for 25 straight days, so I was in the best physical condition. I continued working. Twice did I tell people in my workshops that I had anything.
Yeah, you don't spread bad news. You don't want somebody putting that energy out.
Here's the thing, though. It's like, first off, they called it growth. I took the W out of growth. I put it in my column, and I called it Groth.
Okay.
Groth had the coming out date. The coming out date was on St. Patty's Day.
Nice.
That's when it was coming out. I had between that moment and that day to literally get myself in the best physical condition, make sure my mental place was there, because here's one of the things I know. I, no mistakes, no accidents, no coincidences. I got to walk my talk, and I did it. They told me that the surgery would last 2 to 4 hours. Did a radical nephrectomy. They just took the whole thing out. How long do you think my surgery lasted?
Knowing you, 30 minutes.
1 hour, 45 minutes. I wish it would have been. Right? They told me I was going to be in the hospital 4 to 7 days. How many days do you think I was in the hospital?
Four.
One. Well, after one day, they told me I could go home. I bargained for a second day.
Wow.
When they wheeled me up in my room, I looked at my nurse and I said, you bother me, we go for a walk. Within 6 hours, I was walking up to the nurse's station. Within 12 hours, I was doing loops around that floor on the hospital.
Now, I want to cut in real quick, because before I lose it, he changed growth to Groth. Growth in itself is something you see as continue to happen. Because we grow our whole lives until we pass away.
Right. So he
found the right verbiage to make that word spark something different in his chest and in his mind. I was doing a video on Facebook not too long ago, and I got another one planned about making the verbiage right. Semantics are everything when it comes to this. And he didn't just change the word. He changed the letters in the word to make it something else. That right there is explosive. Whatever you want in life, I don't care if it's a candy bar or curing yourself. Whatever you want in life, you can find a way to make the words work for you and use them.
Yes.
Now, using the words leads me to my next point. He said he worked out every day until then, getting himself in shape, in the best shape that he possibly could. He wasn't just working out his muscles, he's working out his mind. While you're in the gym and you're training and your arm is burning because you're using it, you're not thinking about stressful thoughts. You're not thinking about happy thoughts. You're focused on your body. And when you focus on your body, you're healing your body. I do this meditation, Jim, where I'll focus on just one body part. Nothing else in life will have my attention except that body part. And sometimes, if my mind is trying to go elsewhere, this is what I do. I take that body part and I try my hardest to move it the smallest I could possibly move it. And it gives 100% focus to that body part. You're not focusing on something else. These are two mental exercises that he was able to do for almost a month before, you know, to get it right. And you see how it worked out. I'm sorry, continue.
And may I share with you something? Monday morning, it was discovered. Monday night, I did what's called a breath circle, which is what I do in facilities.
What's it called again?
It's called a breath circle.
A breath circle, okay.
And it is this powerful, moving spiritual meditation. And this is going to sound a little crazy, but I talked to the spirit of the tumor. And I told it, I gave it notice that it was going to stay right where it was. I was going to, and it was going to be leaving soon. And I was going to be building everything of strength around it.
Can you tell me exactly how the breath circle works? Because I'm anxious. I know the listeners that we want to know.
So, and I'll just give you a heads up. If you ever want to do one, we'll do a FaceTime and I'll do one for you and I will give you the experience. I just need to be able to talk to you. But breath circle is, like, I do it in recovery centers. There is something about people in recovery, right? If you think about the spiritual aspects of addiction with chemical substances, each chemical, it has a spirit about it. Right?
The spirit of the spirit. We talked about this before.
We talked about
that
Monday, right? And I'm just going to do a quick 30-second thing here, right? Because if I sit cross-legged and go, hey, dude, is the pizza here yet? Turn up the music, man. What's my drug of choice?
That would be the Mary Jane right there.
That would be the Mary Jane. And you know that because when your spirit literally intertwines with that spirit, that is who you become. Every single drug has a spirit that you commingle with in an attempt to numb the pain that your heart feels. And I'm talking about addiction here. And when you heal, when you truly understand the reason that you use, what opens up is the choice not to use ever again. And there is something about the breath work, because basically you're laying down, you're listening to specific music, you're breathing a specific way, and when you do that, my experience is it gets people out of their conscious minds, gets you into your deeply unconscious mind, and quite literally, that is where you do deep healing and you let this stuff go. And when you come out of letting this stuff go, your mind is clear. Your mind is empty. It is literally in a space of no thing. And from the space of no thing, you can begin to, you know, it's something I call tabula rasa, clear the slate. When the slate is clear, we create who we choose to be. I choose to be confident. I choose to be empowering. I choose to be love for self, and because I'm love for self, heart-centered love, Neo, I can say I love you like a brother, because you are. It's like the first time we interacted,
yes.
We are literally, we vibrate at such separate, or at such close and parallel frequencies that I feel like I know you. It's like I could fly to wherever you are. We could go out, and all we would be is this space of brotherhood, this space of love. and we would literally radiate such positivity that wherever we walked, nothing would happen to us.
I definitely, damn, you just painted a crazy picture for me, because I'm in it while you're saying it. I definitely feel the love for you too, brother. It's we definitely clicked, and I think it's no mistake that, you know, we clicked on both of these shows. The information that you put out there is fantastic, and I'm learning from you. Every time we talk, I learn from you, and I don't get that much, you know. I get a lot of things from the quantum field. I don't get to, you know, from all the coaches, I get to pull one or two things, but just our vibe, man. We're killing it, and we got to keep killing it together. Stay tuned. Me and him are going to do a lot of things together. But the breathing circle, once you get to that space, it's two people, and then what do you do?
So, like, I actually, most of the time I do the breath work with up to 20 to 30 people. The biggest group I've been with is 60 people. Basically breathe. I basically become a spiritual space holder. They're breathing a specific way, and in the breath, I don't know how it does what it does, but I know it works. In the breath, they literally emerge clear. They emerge clean. They emerge feeling so powerful, and all the voices in the head, they all go quiet.
You know, it's, oh my goodness. I wanted to, on my inventions page, on my website, I choose to put all my inventions out there. I'm not taking anything to the grave with me. If you want to steal my ideas, steal them. Make a couple $1 million. Steal them all. Eventually, you're going to say, hey, we need to bring him on. So go ahead, take him. So one of the things on there I have is called Med Studios. I wanted to open a meditation studio with, like, you know, 10-minute room, 20-minute room, 30-minute rooms, airtight. And it's like, you're on your lunch break from work and you had a stressful day. You walk in. You know, boop, sign in with your little key fob, enter a 10-minute room, and when it starts, it's shut down 10 minutes. There's something about meditating with more than one person does something dynamic and crazy. I could see you're about to say something. Go ahead.
Yes, right? I mean, there is, and I'm gonna say something a little different, but there is something about not only getting out of your own mind, but literally creating the space where you can let go of all of that energy you hold on to, and you emerge in the space of no thing. Because from no thing, you can create whatever empowers you.
You know what? Creating, I just recently discovered creating space. Denise, I think, yeah. one of the coaches I interviewed told me, and I close my eyes and I see myself with my own farmland, and then the neighbor's plot owned by the government, you know, not owned by anybody. It's like I picture myself buying that big, you know, square plot of, you know, and it's empty. And then I put a dream or a goal there, and it gets filled. It's been working ever since. But now you got me thinking that I can create this space, and I see myself, after I buy this space, boom, it's mine. I see myself walking and jumping the fence, and I'm in this space of nothingness. My house, my car, my career, my kids are in the other yard behind me, and I just hop the fence, and I'm in this space of nothingness, and I feel it. It's not just a space where I can put a car or my next house. I'm feeling just the space, and I love it. It feels amazing. I know if you guys are listening and you guys want to try this, try it. Get in this space, hop the fence, and there's nothing there. There's no plans. There's nothing to do except be still and enjoy that.
May I give people, like, a little bit of an intro for them? Because oftentimes people will be like, Jim, I can't do it, right? I can't. So
that's what everyone says.
Right? I can't, right? All you literally have to do is close your eyes and be so aware of your thoughts. And for me, thoughts flow like a river. Mm-hmm. And I can get to the space that with my eyes closed, I can see the river of thought. I can put it over there. I can then step back away from it. I can turn around, and all I am, as I'm looking at the space of vast awareness, and my thoughts are behind me, and that vast awareness literally fills in 3 to 6 feet behind me. All my thoughts are flowing, and they just continue to flow. But in front of me is this space, a vast awareness. And then I notice with my thoughts, 3 to 6 feet behind me, that vast awareness, that is what is in my head with my thoughts, 3 to 6 feet. And then I can turn and I can see the thoughts, and I notice that all of our thoughts occur in a space of vast awareness, in a space of peace, in a space of no thing.
When you say that, you make, oh my goodness, you're sparking things up. I'm getting things from the quantum field. I'm picturing, let's say you're watching TV and it's really, really great part of an episode, right? And you're watching TV and someone comes up behind you and says, you know, it tries to call your attention, and you kind of, you don't turn your head all the way. You just turn it a little bit. You put your hand up and you say, I'll be there in a second. Like, give me a second. I'm watching this. Now, that right there is what I was feeling with the emptiness. I was looking at this plot of empty land, and it's beautiful, and it's oneness. And then a thought comes in. We got to pick up milk or something, you know, a thought creeps in, and I kind of over the shoulder, without looking back, without taking my eyes off of the emptiness, I'll be there in a second, hold on. You know, and I kind of just wave it off to the back and get back to where I am. That synergy, what he was talking about. I always try to ask different coaches to come up. I try to come up with different ways to get that nowness, that stillness. And one coach has suggested you see that you are naked underneath your clothes. You know, that's a good way to come back to home, to leave all the thoughts behind. There's different exercises and different things you can do. And Jim just brought up a great one. That stillness, that awareness. So many people, Jim, I know you get this all the time. People say, I can't do it. I'm too busy. I got too many bills, too much drama going on. There's another thing that's a really big hurdle, a really big roadblock, almost a brick wall, is pain. You've got herniated discs, I've got herniated discs, and those make it extremely hard to stay peaceful when your eyes are closed. And you know what? I'm going to ask you, how do you handle that?
Well, so pain is a created experience.
Mm-hmm.
And my best example of that, so I have a little ink, right? Mm-hmm. On this side, I have one bit of ink, and on this side I got another.
His shoulders.
And I each of my shoulders. And the first time I got it, I talked to the guy, and we went straight 2.5 hours. And I'm like, I'm not in pain. I said, this is so cool. I said, I have the experience of pain. That doesn't mean I have to be in pain. And this side, which has 7 colors on it, took 3.5 straight. Literally, I was like, it was like, I'm like, I'm just, and the guy is like, the guy was just laughing, right? I was just having an experience of pain. When I got my kidney removed, right? I'm in recovery. I got about 42 years. Tomorrow it'll be 42 years, 2 months in recovery.
42. That's my number.
And I told my doctor, I said, I'm an addict. And he looked at me and he said, I don't care. He said, we're taking one of your organs out and we're going to go straight through the front of you. And it was a robotically assisted procedure. He said, you're going to come out of this and you're going to hurt. So what we agreed upon is that I had to request a painkiller. And it is one of the most amazing things to be aware of pain. And I'm not going to lie. It is the most pain I've ever felt in my life, waking up after literally being gutted and quartered. And this smart aleck nurse looks at me and it says, well, it's on your chart that we have to, would you like a painkiller?
Oh my goodness.
And at the time, I actually swore and said, swearing word, yes. And then they gave me the painkiller, and within 30 seconds the pain was gone, but all I experienced was being in a cloudy haze, and I did not like it. So my game was to see how long I could be with the experience of pain before I made it mean something to the point that I needed a painkiller.
Wow. So you
and for a day I did actually for 2 days I did, but then I think I only took one pill after that, and that was it.
All right, now I gotta hit you with this because I know this is what one of my clients would hit me with. It hurts, you know. It stings. It hurts. No matter how many times no matter how much I try to block it out, no matter how much meditating, no matter how much love I have for myself and spirituality, that stuff still hurts. I myself struggle with that. Myself with my herniated discs and injuries that I have, and I try to be as positive as I can about the situation. You know, but it is what it is. You know, and then you end up in a situation like people who pull their hamstring. That's different. That's a little bit different because it's situational. That's going to go away. They can get past that. But in that moment where they're laying on the floor, I kind of recently felt something like that myself. So I'm actually coming to you as a patient, as a client. How can I coach myself through this pain?
Well, here's a question I have for you. Have you ever been with pain as long as you can without making it mean something? That's what the tattoo, it was. I was fascinated that I could be with this ongoing pain and not make it mean something.
I might have to ask you to reword that question. I can't even fathom having pain without it mean something.
And first off, it hurt. Okay?
Yeah. I'm glad you said that because I'm like, wait a minute.
It hurt.
Because I have tattoos.
I'm like one of these guys that's like taking a nail and shoving it up my head and saying there's no pain. It hurt.
But you were able to somehow remove yourself.
Well, I don't know. No, because it hurt. There's no removing. It hurt. Here's the thing, though. What do you make pain mean? I mean, with my discs, I've started something called B Barless, which is the best exercise program. It's in 24-hour fitness studios. I can literally, it's 1 hour of core that builds all the muscles up, and I am aware of the pain, but I don't have it mean something. And it, like when the tattoo was the first time I can ever remember, like literally saying, yes, go ahead and stick a needle in me 10,000 times. And he was just going and I wasn't flinching. And the guy is like, dude, you sure you don't need a break? I'm like, this is fascinating because I could be with the pain. And sometimes, like, I swear, but I stopped making it mean something, that I needed to glorify it.
You know what? I'm going to ask you, because it was just recently, within the last 2 weeks, I told myself, when I have extreme pain in my neck for most of the day, but, you know, if I'm doing something, I don't notice it. It's when I'm not doing something is when I notice it. But certain activities in flare things, I guess you can say. And I told myself, when I am taken away from what I'm working on, no matter what it is, when I'm taken away from what I'm working on mentally because the pain is so sharp, I'm going to use that as a trigger to feel my oneness with the watcher. That you know, the when you're in a quiet room by yourself, you can feel it watching you. I'm going to use that, and that's God to me. And I'm going to use that to acknowledge that God is watching me. Smile, like, hey, I forgot you were there because I wasn't, you know. So I use it as a trigger for something good. And I noticed that it kind of drifts the pain away. And I'm thinking if that's what you're talking about.
It's completed. So may I make a request?
Yeah.
Give the pain to God.
That sounds like a great next step. Because I mean, I'm already bringing them in. All right.
Because God is there. Why do you think we have a greater power so that it can handle these things, so that we literally do what we were intended to do?
Wow. That's the next step in evolution. And I'm glad you told me, because it's like, because that's what I do. And from midnight till 2 a.m, I'll get meditative and I'll let things come to me and I'll explore different things. And that's where I get all my ideas for all my videos. And in the next step of progression would be that I surrender all. It's the song that Oprah sings, give it to God. And it's like,
yeah.
That pain, that's the biggest pain that I have in my life right now. But getting a tattoo was probably the most painful thing I've ever been through. It's a needle stabbing you thousands of times per minute. It's insane.
Yeah. I've fired my God twice and hired the God that literally enlivens my soul. And sometimes it's a controversial thing to say,
mm-hmm.
because if I'm not to be, I guess I'm just going to say what's there. And if y'all are offended, I will apologize.
Don't
but
be.
Growing up, the old white man that's sitting up there looking at me does not give me a measured amount of compassion that humanity needs right now. And humanity begins with me, and I get to be the reflection of God in the world. And it starts with me and my pain. And if I think that I am big enough and strong enough and whatever to carry all the pain that my thoughts create, I will fall. And that is why I have my God, that, or my great spirit, or whatever you call it, to literally give that burden to, so that my focus can be on creating shift so that people can live their most amazingness.
Now, I'm gonna lead into this. I have this exercise that I do where there's this Cherry Hill One building out here. It says if me and you were staring at the same building, we would see it two different ways. I might see it as full. You might see it as slightly empty. I might see it with brown walls. You might see it with gray. Different things are going on in our minds. We're literally seeing two different walls. We're looking at the same building, but we're seeing two different things. And that's how I feel about God. Everybody can look at God different ways. But we're all looking at the same building, and what you did, that's why I said, I don't think anyone should take offense to you saying you fired God, because it's not like a fired thing. It's kind of like you chose to look at the building differently. You chose to look at God in a new face, in a new light, as opposed to kicking him out and firing him.
No, I'm not kicking him out, because it's funny. Every time I kick him out, that pain grows to where I can't handle it. Because I give great spirit all of the pain. And I also allow great spirit to have the joy and to, you know, it's like, I want to be a vessel of nothing so that when I'm sitting in front of, whether it's one person or 20, that their spirit hears what it needs to hear so that a space of transformation can occur. And you know, cliche, they can live an amazing life.
I'm going to venture to say, because I've quote unquote kicked God out a few times, I'm going to venture to say every time I kicked him out, he came back stronger, better. Would you agree with that?
God only comes back when we invite him in. Right, it's the variation on that footprints on the sand, right? Because mm-hmm. I have a complete variation. Because God will always hold you in a space of love. You know, it's like you're walking along, you're walking with God, and then there's only one set of footprints, right? Mm-hmm. But then there's all this thrashing and kicking, and then there's knees, and then there's get up, and then there's two people walking again. We thrash and we attempt. We don't like we take that free will. We choose and we say we don't need God, and we thrash and we kick, and God is always there.
He keeps coming back every time.
Always.
I kind of feel ashamed to say it, but I'll say it anyway. I'm not gonna say cursed God out, but I mean I kind of have before. I've had my angry moments where I've said things and done things and like, why isn't it like this? And I gotta tell you, the next day things got instantly better. So I'm not suggesting everyone go curse God out, but it's okay to have it out with him every now and then. He is you. You're having it out with yourself for a better future for yourself. You love yourself and you're doing it for yourself. So if you gotta have it out. Just make sure you follow it up with something positive. Because I know that every time I've had it out with God, at the end I smiled. If you go in a room as angry as you can and scream as loud as you can into a pillow, you're going to notice something at the end. You start laughing.
So we hold this stuff. We energetically hold this stuff in us. And we're like, when you literally let it out, the space that gets created, you fill with sacred and honored love. And of course you have to laugh, because now you're filled with love.
It's life. It's this journey. Oh, it's so crazy. We spent so much time talking about, you know, all this other stuff. I wanted to get back into the attic because we only got like 10 minutes left. Do you consider it addicted if, let's say, I see a Swiss Army knife that I really want and I order it, and for the next 3 days I'm watching 50,000 YouTube videos and going on websites studying this Swiss Army knife? Is that an addiction until it gets here? Because once it gets here, I play with it for a day and then I throw it in a drawer and never thinking about it again. Would you consider that an addiction, like a temporary addiction or something?
So is that an addiction or obsession? You know,
I'd have to say obsession, I guess.
Right, it's just like you're just obsessed to getting it. I'm the same way. One of my hobbies, right, is patches.
Oh yeah, you were showing me the other day.
And this is one that I got that I'm trading for another one. And I don't even remember the patches I ordered, but they should. Oh yeah, I did order that. And if you were to look at the roof of my car, and I'm actually making a wall in my space to put them all up, they give me great joy. You bet it's an addiction. But you want to know something? Helps the economy, helps me feel good. My backpack has patches. Do you see back there? Do you see back on the picture there?
I can see. I see you got some on the shelf in frames. And you know, you said it makes you feel good, and that's the important part. 60,000 thoughts on average per day per person, and you're watering great ones because you feel good. And that's what it's about.
Yeah, my clients look at those, and they're like, those are cool. And then that gets a discussion going.
But definitely.
Bam!
I never heard of patch collecting. But you would call, so your patch collecting is an addiction or an obsession?
Oh, it's an addiction, and I'm okay with it.
Okay, so me, I get like that. If I order something online, I research it on every website I can. I learn everything of all of my drones. I know every wire, the name and number of it before it gets here. Is that an addiction or an obsession?
No, that's an obsession.
Okay.
Because it's like, here's the thing. I order my patches and I'm done. Last night, after my last client ended 5 minutes before a drop. Of 100 and some people in, I was number 6.
Nice.
So, got in, ordered my patches, paid for, moved on.
So it's an obsession if it ends right afterwards, right? If you get it and you're like, I don't even want it no more. If that's what you mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
But here's the other thing, right? If I never ordered another patch, I'd be okay. Yeah. I just like it.
That's true.
You know? My coffee. Like, I love good coffee. I go to a special place to get my coffee. One of my recovery centers, I normally bring a few pounds of coffee up to them.
So that's an
addiction. And the funny thing was, right, prior to my surgery, I used to drink probably 2 pots a day.
Wow.
My doctor literally said one to two cups a day. I went out and bought a 32-ounce mug. Said, okay, doc, one cup a day. And the guy looks at me and smiles. And I don't need it, but I enjoy it. Addiction is a funny thing because I believe that we are all addicted to something. Right? Some people, they're addicted to looking good. Some people are addicted to working. Some people have chemicals. Some people are addicted to food. Some people have codependency issues, which is addicted to the approval of others. There's all kinds of addictions on the scale.
You're going to be my life coach for the next couple minutes. I think I am addicted to progress, and I think that it's such an addiction that it hinders me from being able to appreciate the things in my life now. I literally see myself as a guy who's living in a small house struggling with bills when I'm not doing any of that. And I think it's the fact that I'm not satisfied because I see that next step and I want it so bad that it totally leaves me blind to the great things in my life now. How could I get out of that?
You have amazingly great things. And what if you get to be the person that somebody looks at and says, I want to be like Neo?
Well, that's the thing. I know I'm at that point now. I just don't feel it. I have to go out of my way to do mental exercises to enjoy.
So where did you, quote unquote, lose the feeling?
I think it's always been like that. I think no. When I look back to high school, captain of the football team, starting varsity, girls, I got decent grades, life is great, and all I could look at was the next step. And it made me not be able to appreciate that. Even younger than that, before football in high school, when I was in middle school, I was a karate champion, ranked in the nation, top of my game, and I couldn't appreciate that because all I wanted to do was get that at next level. You know, I was a purple belt, I wanted a brown belt. When I was a brown belt, I wanted a black belt. That's all I could look at was that next level. And it kept me from being able to appreciate, look, I got ranked in the nation in karate as a kid. You know, and to this day, I still can't appreciate that because I'm always looking at the next step.
Yeah, but you know what I'm hearing? Not only did you have a deep appreciation, but you have this drive for growth. Here's my request for the next 24 hours. As you move through your day, every moment, I want you to practice appreciating exactly where you are and see what arises.
Okay. I like that.
If you and I were on a playground and we were each 5 years old, what would we know?
Playground.
All we know. There would be no color difference between us. There would be two guys, and we would create our adventure.
As we went.
When we created our adventure, we would define our rules. We would define our guides. We would define the boundaries. And then we would just fully be. And when we're done, whether there's a winner or loser, two winners, two losers, we would be done. We would declare it done. And we would move off.
That's what it is. Go ahead.
It's literally living however old you are, and this is for every listener out there. For me, my favorite age was 6. I lead my workshop as if I'm 6 because it's just fun. And I love life. That is a created love that nourishes my soul. And then somebody cuts me off. And then I was just like, and the funny thing was, right? I'm gonna tell a little story, right? I used to think I was the mini traffic cop, and I was living in Idaho once, and somebody was trying to pass me. It's like, nope, it's against the law. I made sure they didn't do it. We pulled up to a stop sign. I'm like, uh-oh, this is not going to get good. The door opened up, and this person jumped out, and I jumped out, and there was a woman who had blood all over her. And she's like, what are you doing? She's like, I need to get my child to the hospital.
Wow.
In that moment, distinctly, I gave up knowing what's happening in another person's world. Somebody wants to pass me. Somebody wants to cut me off.
That is...
I do not know where the person in the car in front of me, behind me, beside me, whatever, I don't know where they are. And I don't need to know. I get to be with how I am in the moment.
That is crazy that he said that. One of my biggest things I've been doing since I think August is telling people, stop assuming you know. Put yourself in another person's shoes. You don't know what that person's going through. Your boss is being a butt wipe. You don't know what they're going through that day. A person cuts you off on the highway. You don't know what's happening. And it's amazing that he just said that. Part of progressing, the way me and him have progressed in this enlightened state, part of getting there is letting that go. That thinking you know this person's trying to get at you because they're trying to get at you. Part of growth is letting certain things go, and that's one of them. Don't assume you know what someone's been through. Don't assume you know what's going to happen to you. You don't. A meteor could hit us all in 5 minutes and end everything. You don't know what you're going to be doing tonight. You got to keep all of that separated. Jim, we are at the end of the show. Listen, I'd love to talk for it. I'd love to talk for another couple hours. We could go on forever. The way we flow is just great. Thank you. It's really my honor to have you on the show today.
Yeah. And for everybody listening out there, what did you get? How can you make your life better? And I just want to do a quick plug. If you want to get a hold of me, I'm Jim at recoveryelevated.com, or go to either Recovery Elevated or Amazing Life Design on Facebook. Like me. I put videos up there. And this will not be the last talk that you and I shall do together.
Definitely, definitely will not be the last talk. And his episode will be airing of Off the Bench will be airing sometime next week. We'll get you all the dates. We'll blast it on social media and keep everybody in the loop. Jim, thank you for coming on. Thank you for coming on both the shows. He's an awesome guy. You heard everything yourself. Thank you guys for listening. NeoPositivity.com, NeoPositivity Facebook, and Off the Bench airing weeknights at 8, 7 Central. Check me out. Trying to change the world one mind at a time, but on a massive scale. Thoughts become things is everything. Be careful what you focus on. You are literally creating your future. I love you guys, and I'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Love you guys also. Thank you, Neo. Love you, brother.
Love you too, brother. See you next time.